Mile Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Bet with Tote and support racing in the UK and Ireland.
After a weekend of gravy, we've got the duo back. It's Andrew Blair-White.
Hi, Andrew. How are things?
I'm all right, my man. I was delighted to see your reaction to the running order yesterday.
Yep.
He goes, Scottish champion hurdle. Oh, fantastic. Future champions novice chase. Magnifique. Scottish Grand National. Wait. The what? The Mansion Bet Spring Cup Handicap. What the hell is this, Kennedy? He was not impressed. But he's in flat mode. It's okay. And he has been bringing the gravy. And another man who's been bringing the gravy. Dearie me. Dickor Irlandais. 80-1, 66-1, each way scumbag bet again landed by the genius that is a man who also tipped the Grand National winner, Manila Times. It's the return of the Godfather, Mr. Rory DeLargy. How are you, sir?
Hello.
If you bet with Tote Plus, 10% extra on your winnings and all dividends. I mean, come on. You've got to be betting with Tote on Sunday. To the 225 at Ayr, the Scottish champion hurdle, where Calico is your 5-2 favourite currently. Milkwood, around about the 3-1 shot. Time White, 13-2. Tommy's Oscar is about 7s. Diego de Chamel, 15-2.
40.
And Rory's getting annoyed at pronunciations. Let's just go. Andrew Blair-White, who wins the Scottish champion hurdle?
Yeah, good race, Emmett. There's been an awful lot of money for this Calico, which I think has come together from people putting two and two together. Skelton, I think, could have run four or five of his horses in this, and he's decided to run this horse. Good form behind Cape Gentleman at Kempton. I thought he threw it away, though, that day in the Dovecote, which I wasn't overly impressed by. And then he slightly scrambled over the line at long odds on at Warwick. He wouldn't be for me, as much as I know. The Skelton horses always have to be very well respected. I just think some of them are getting well overbet at this stage because of the whole Harry Skelton going for the jockey's title thing. And the one that you're getting a much bigger price than I believe you should do is Tommy's Oscar at 7-1. I believe he should be shorter than that. I was really taken with the way he did it at Kelso the last day, beating Christopher Wood and across the line very impressively. He's been very consistent this year. Just one bad run at Kelso the time before where he was sixth behind the Shunter. But the Shunter was first and Favoir was third. And that form looks pretty robust at this stage in the Moor battle. Before that, he was second at Bareback Jack and he'd won a couple of novice hurdles before then. I think he's still improving. He's over a mark of 138 now. So this is his toughest assignment. But Anne Hamilton has done a very good job with the small string she has this year. And when you think of Nuts Well, this horse, Pay the Piper, they're all, you know, very good money spinners for the yard. And this horse has been brought together perhaps a little bit more quietly with a race like this probably in mind throughout the year. And I think, personally, I'd have Tommy's Oscar as a 4-5-1 shot. So you're getting 7-1. Some people would want to play that each way. You could back him on the nose as well. I think a few of these ahead of him, Milkwood, finds ways to not win races and Time White's been a bit of a bust recently. I can't understand how Time White's 13-2 and Anna Bonina's 10s when the form would indicate that Anna Bonina was ahead of Time White at Cheltenham and County Hurdle, but they were kind of also rounds in that race. So I take Tommy's Oscar, the one that's maybe missed some of the big meetings, and I think you're getting a bigger price than you should do.
Yeah, you can get eights in places, to be fair, about Time White. So I think you're right about the Skelton horse as well, by the way. It's 2-2 together. Also, I wonder how welcome Harry Skelton will be in the North. It's all about Brian Hughes this weekend. We'll see. The North remembers. Good old Game of Thrones. Rory DeLargy?
I largely agree with that. Bit harsh on Milkwood. Saying he finds ways of losing races, like he ran the race of his life in the county last time out. You know, the winner was a grade one winner in waiting, despite the fact that he sneaked in there off a ridiculously low weight.
Hey, the Irish horses were all horrifically handicapped. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible the treatment the Irish horses got.
I think Milkwood is the right favourite for this race, but I think he was the right favourite for the race. I'm not massively convinced about the move on Calico. For all he's unexposed, I agree with what Andrew said about him. He could win this. I wouldn't be a hugely surprised. But he was entitled to win as well as he did at Warwick last time out. And he did wander around at Kempton when he was beaten in the Dovecote, which wasn't, I don't think, was a great race. I think the winner was well placed to come across and win that. I also do like Tommy's Oscar. He's bound to want a little bit further in time. He's done really well this season. I've liked him all the way through. And I was delighted to see him bounce back from that that defeat at Kelso too, which is a career best last time out. But he is, you know, he's in a tougher race off a 6 pound higher mark here, and he needs to improve again to win. I don't think he's a bad price. But I think on balance, I think Time White is probably the bet in the race. I know he was well beaten in the county hurdle, but he wouldn't be as strong a stayer as one or two of these. And Nicholas has always made it known that he wanted to come for this race. This has been his end of season target. This is not an afterthought for Time White. I've been keen on Milkwood all season because, and I thought his fourth in the Welsh Champion Hurdle was really strong form, as has been proven since. And then he was very unlucky in the Jerry Field. And of course, in that Jerry Field, and Time White was also unlucky. He was hampered and unseated Harry Cobden there when he was still travelling strongly. He was trading away 3-1 at the time at the second last. And he had no chance of staying on board. And of course, Milkwood, who was travelling very strongly there, was taken out of the race at the same time. They're quite similar types in that both of them were rested until the Befair Hurdle after that. Both of them travelled really well through the Befair Hurdle before looking like the run was needed. They almost used that at the richest handicap hurdle of the entire season to put themselves right for a run at Cheltenham. Time White, actually, despite the fact he finished ninth in that race, he traded 2.4 in running. And he was unfancied. He was a 50-1 poke on the exchange. He never really threatened and what again wasn't at all fancied in the county hurdle, but on quickish ground, assuming that they don't get any rain, there's rain due late Sunday into Monday, a lot of rain on Monday from the weather forecast I looked at a couple of days ago. I've not checked it again now, but assuming they don't get rain, that'd be a big positive for him. If it does get soft, that would be a concern. He definitely wants top of the ground Time One. He definitely wants a sharp test at 2 miles, which this is really made for a speed horse. And I think at the prices, he's probably the one to be on. I'm not suggesting he's got more of a chance specifically than Milkwood. As I said, you know, I thought Milkwood would have won the Jerry Field and the way it panned out. But obviously, he's now moved up to a mark of 142. They raced off the same mark in the Betfair Hurdle. And Time White is now on 138, so he's 4 pound better off from where he was. And I think on value grounds, he just shades it.
Well, we've had some upsets in this race in years gone by, so I would not put anyone off the Time White, Tommy's Oscar, Exacta, reverse
Exacta. We had one of the shocks in this race. Chesterfield was a stone bonking certainty in 2017.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you'll find. Yeah, you that in the February.
But didn't you put him up at like 20s? That week, well, and he went off at 12s or something crazy like that.
Yeah, but he was, well, obviously, as I said, he was a horse that, you know, I said what he wants is a decent, one of these decent handicap hurdles on good ground. And he ended up almost heavy for the county hurdle. He ran really well to be fourth, I think. Mm. And then came and won this. That was my last winner. It was nice.
Yeah, except for last weekend when you had Men at Times in the Grand National. But aside from that, and of course, being crowned NAPS champion of the Racing Post last year as well.
Along, lad.
Not living in the past at all, Mr. DeLarghi, as we move on to the 3 o'clock, the Jordan Electrics Limited Future Champions Novices Chase Grade 2, because Rory always loves it when I say that. All Mankind is slightly odds-on favour than Tumak Dumatan.
Awful.
I know. 15-8. And then there's two others. Is it just between the two, Andrew?
I think that's a bit of a discredit to the other two horses, who are both nice progressive types themselves. They would have a fair bit to find on the figure's mind. Look, All Mankind's probably the best horse in this race, and as much as I didn't like him for the Arkle at all, like, his record away from Cheltenham is exemplary. Just a little bit concerned at this stage whether they may be just going to the well one too many times this year. He's had a hard enough season he looks the type of horse that's constantly giving himself hard races. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but he looked a very, very tired horse at the finish in the Arkle. They went off far too quick, and he's up a half mile today, or sorry, on Sunday. So I think there's enough just on that evidence, despite the fact that he is probably the best horse in the race, to take him on at odds on. And I'd side with Tamarack to Matan. I thought he did it quite nicely in the Pendle, beating Gallo and Cool Cody. Cool Cody's given out kind of mixed messages for that form. He ran quite well at the festival, then didn't run great the other day at Cheltenham, back in another handicap chase, but he'd had a difficult season as well. Prior to that, second to Shishkin, that's obviously pretty good form, even though he was well beat. Jumps quite nicely and seems to like a bit of nice ground. So I think he'll sit and stalk All Mankind. This Melistic may well go forward as well. He has done in the past. So it'll be interesting to see how they ride him, because if they go and try and match eyeballs with All Mankind, that will be his race run, I suspect. And Tamarack to Matan to hopefully sit in behind them and pounce late and go on and maybe be the slightly stronger stayer. Certainly with the way he finished in the Pendle, you'd like to hope he might have the edge in the final furlong or two for All Mankind, who's been a very admirable horse this year. But I'd be concerned whether they've maybe gone to the pot one too many times.
I'm in agreement, by the way. Roy Delargy?
Yes, pretty much agree with all of that. He is just about the pick over Tamarack to Matan. But Tamarack to Matan, again, is a horse who's been laid out for this meeting. Coming here straight after his best win so far in the Pendle. And although that isn't as good as the favourite's best form, I just think he's liable to peak here, Tamarack to Matan. I think he'll take his form up again a couple of pounds. Whereas you'd be a little bit wary of whether All Mankind will give his running. If he does, he wins. But I think it's a fair chance that he won't, and Tamarack to Matan does have the scope to do a little bit better than he has. We haven't seen the best of him at all so far. He will, I think he'd give All Mankind a bit of a race, even if All Mankind was at his best. And I think with the possibility of him running flat after Cheltenham, I'd prefer to be with Tamarack to Matan. But I suspect the betting on the day will go in that direction, really. Mm.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you're going to uncover an awful lot of value in the race, but obviously Nicholas has won this race a few times, including with Secret Investor 2 years ago, obviously, and Le Mercury a few years ago, horses with similar sort of profiles. So I think he will. I think he'll win it again, but I'm not sure that there's enough in there for me to want to have a punt on the race.
More from Andrew and Rory in our weekend preview in a second. First of all, Tilt Plus. Jamie talked to us about this on our Grand National review, and I got to tell you about it. It provides the biggest and best pool betting payouts available to racing fans. Total on a mission to provide bettors and especially Final Furlong podcast listeners with extra gravy by giving the best value possible, and this does just that. Let me explain why. Tote Plus is a new enhanced dividend on all of Tote's racing pools. So with Tote Plus, you're now getting better value than ever, and bettors can take advantage of some of the brilliant payouts the pools provide at the biggest meetings of the year. So let's look back at the Cheltenham Festival, for example. Tote beat the SP on 17 out of the 28 races. But even when they didn't, there's still the Tote SP guarantee. So Tote will match the SP even if they don't beat it. Well, now on top of that, they will boost your winnings by 10%. So not only do you have the potential of being paid more by Tote, you also have the Tote guarantee for SP and 10% extra guaranteed with Tote Plus. They are giving you free money. Let me just walk you through a hypothetical. Can I walk you through a hypothetical? Let's say you manage to win the place pot. You will get 10% more back than if you bet in a shop or through one of Tote's partner websites. Even the Scoop 6. Let's say you manage to land a huge rollover and you win £1 million. Tote will boost your winnings to £1,100,000. That's what Tote Plus is. Tote Plus is a game changer, but it is only available if you bet directly via Tote.com. tote.co.uk or the official Tote app. The gravy is there. And with a big weekend coming up, sign up now at tote.co.uk. If you're signing up for a new account, you will get a risk-free bet on any of their pools, and you're getting 10% extra on your winnings as well. Full terms and conditions apply. Be 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. Also, if you manage to get the reference that I said, let me walk you through a hypothetical. Can I walk you through a hypothetical? If you know what that's from, tweet me at Radio Emmett or at Final Furlong Pod using the hashtag FFPComp, and I will send you a Final Furlong podcast mug. If you know that reference, let me walk you through a hypothetical. Can I walk you through a hypothetical? What's that from? Let me know. And a Final Furlong podcast mug is yours, and you will have my undying respect. Let's get back to the best bets for the weekend. No taking risks for Sean. I hate Robbie Supple's guts. Quinlan. It's going to be some crack. So for the Coral Scottish Grand National, 3:35 live on ITV and Racing TV. Aye, right. 6-1. Sam's Adventure is then tens. Dingo Dollar, tens, although is shorter in places. Soldier of Love, you can get tens about. Vintage Clouds, 12s. Mighty Thunder is around about 14s. Mr. Fog Patches with Danny Mullins on board, 14s. And then there he is, Shawnee Quinlan on the Ferrymaster. And he told you if he wasn't going to be on board taking risks, that was the horse he was most likely going to ride. 14-1 is the best price that you can get. Rory, you managed to get the winner of the Grand National last week for us. Well done, sir. Can you do it again? Who's going to win the Scottish Grand National?
Well, unfortunately, the horse I thought was going to win the Scottish Grand National at a massive price is now a non-runner. Deeply disappointing. I've done a if you want to read my thoughts on all the runners for this, you can find it on the Sporting Life website. I've had to change my verdict on the contest as a result of Lord Napier not running. Perhaps he goes to the, I don't know why he's come out. He had a very similar profile to a horse called Al Cole, who won it for owner and trainer a few years ago. And I thought they were planning a very similar coup to with that 40-1 winner, who was definitely backed. He'd been running over hurdles and a decent hurdler as well, Lord Napier. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes, but that's by the by for now. Lots of horses who should run well without winning. Lakeview Lads clearly hates entry, bit of a Vintage Clouds in that regard, and has run well in this before. I Ride's bound to run well, but again, I don't think that, clearly he's going to see the handicapper. He was rated in the 140s at the start of the season. He's won 5-4 now without winning a race, and I just feel that the handicapper's always got a chance to stop him from winning these contests. The first one, looking down the card, who I would give a big chance to, is Not a Chance, ironically, for Alan King. Now, he was pulled up last time. That was in the Grand National trial at Haydock. But he went lame in that race. And prior to that, he looked a horse on the up and up. And a horse that Alan King loves winning the Scottish National. Nothing King he likes more than that. Shouting at journalists, maybe. But winning Scottish Nationals is really what Kingy wants to do. And obviously won this with Gosby Judge back in 2013. You get the impression, I think he might have said it as well in his Weekender column, that Not a Chance was a horse he was trying to engineer a big run in this race. So he didn't run him in the Welsh National, which he could have earlier in the year. He won a good, I think it was the Duchess of Westminster at Bangor in November, and then he laid him out for the Classic Chase at Warwick, which I thought he won in good style. The horse he beat that day, Achille, was coming back from a layoff, but he's run well since. In fact, he ran well in the race and Not a Chance pulled up in last time. You can put a line through that, and he should bounce back from it. He should also be although his done is winning on soft and heavy ground, he should have no problem with a quicker surface for all. If the rain does arrive, it won't be a bad thing for him. So I think he's liable to bounce back, and you get a reasonable price about him because people will look at his latest form line and go, right, well, that's him off the rails, pulling up there. But as I said, ignore that. But ironically, given that Kingy really wants to win a Scottish National, when Dingo Dollar does win the race, Kingy's going to be apoplectic.
Now we're talking.
Ballistic.
Let's go. Let's go, Lele.
Because he used to train Dingo Dollar.
Yes, he did.
And the horse moved to, the owners moved him to Sandy Thompson last time, and he suddenly bounced back to form, having run badly a few times. He's had a wind problem. He's had wind surgery before his previous start, and then he disappointed in the Grand Sefton, which would be over a trip too short for him anyway. He's run well in a couple of Hennessy's / Ladbrokes trophies. This is Ladbrokes his ground. And he bounced right back to his very best, having dropped in the handicap to win easily at Newcastle last time on his first start for Sandy Thompson. They put a tongue tie on him for the first time. Rather odd that he wasn't wearing a tongue tie in the Beecher, in the Grand Sefton, having had wind surgery. Most trainers tend to go with wind surgery and the tongue tie on top of it. Kingy didn't, but Sandy Thompson did, and he won well under Ryan Mania. Brian Hughes has been booked here, which is a very, very positive ride, booking rather. And Deco Dollar, I think, it deserves to be favourite for this race. I thought I might get a slightly bigger price if I had him earlier in the week. He was pretty well found in the market, but he looked an ideal horse for this race. He ran really well. There's a competitive novices handicap chase on this card that he was placed in as a 6-year-old for Kingy, and obviously he's had his issues since, but he looks back to his best. He's still only 9. I'm not suggesting he's improving at that, but he's shown in the past that he's more than capable of winning a race like this off a mark of 1.45. That's actually lower than he was at the start of last year. Given that he's refound his form, and as I said, he ran up to his very, very best on his latest start. Won by 10 lengths, could have won by 20. Obviously, that was a weaker race that he was in. I think there's a big plus that he went to the front there. He didn't lead at entry, but he seems happier when he's out in front. He jumps better. He's not guaranteed to get an easy lead, but I think as long as he's in the van, that's the big positive for him. And that's what you want in this race as well. You don't tend to come from off the pace in a Scottish National. It suits horses who are able to race on the pace and have a little bit of speed about them, as well as stamina. And I think that will stand him in very good stead. Obviously, the likes of Mighty Thunder, who was second in the Midlands National, would be a danger. But plenty of these have got questions to answer. A lot of them, you know, wouldn't be the nippiest. I know you've got to stay 4 miles to win a race like this, but it's difficult for a slow poke to win a Scottish National unless the ground comes up very soft. You've got to have the gears to be reasonably handy. You don't have to be, you know, super fast, but these old staying chasers who like to just keep plugging away, Scottish National is not the ideal race for them generally, as I said, unless it comes up really deep. So a few of these who you know will stay all day are not the easiest to fancy towards the bottom of the weights. The Hollow James, for example, is a horse who, you know, he will stay 5 miles quite happily, but he just doesn't travel or jump well enough in his races for me to fancy him. I know there are a few out there who would give him a chance at a biggish price. Big River, similarly, you know, he stays all day and he's more than capable of winning a race like this. He's run well at the Cheltenham Festival a couple of times, but he tends to get himself badly placed in his races. Claudin Goldie is likely raced for a horse of his age, but again, he can make mistakes in his races, and most of his form has come in smaller fields and at Kelso. Like, almost all his runs have come at Kelso. And you go through the field like that, and plenty of them are similar sort of profiles. So, which is why I was so keen on Lord Napier in the first place. But I did think that the blindingly obvious danger to him was Dingle Dollar, and Not a Chance would be the one that I think is the other towards the head of the market who would offer a bit of value.
I love it, and I was quite interested in him beforehand, but I wasn't going to put him up, but I was just interested to hear what Rory was going to say, and then boom, he comes up with him. I love it, Rory. I love it. And we talked about this horse quite a bit in the show in the past. Right, Andrew Blair White, your pick for the Scottish Grand National.
Yeah, well, I'd echo an awful lot of what Rory's just said there about the majority of the main protagonists in this. I wouldn't be against Dingo Dollar winning. I would probably be taking on Eye Rice just at the prices, you know, 5-1 for a horse that does seem to struggle to get his head in front, doesn't seem great. I thought the one, I know it probably takes a bit of a leap of faith given his form, he's only won one race, but you must wonder what Pat Fahey's doing, sending Mr. Fogpatches over to this off bottom weight. I think it's all too interesting to not be intrigued. You look at the form the last day when he was fourth at Leopardstown, Live Love Laugh in there, and Snugsborough Hall, both who came first and fourth in the Topham, and Ishka Baha, who's won a competitive handicap at Fairy House since. He was arguably very unlucky not to finish a lot closer than the 10-length fourth he did. He's beginning to get a handle of things over fences. This would be his biggest assignment to date by no question, but he is sneaking in off bottom weight as a result. And Danny Mullins booked, which is obviously an excellent booking. This horse has just always shaped, I feel like, he wants a big trip. He was placed many times over 3 miles, 3 mile 1 over hurdles. He hasn't tackled as big a trip. The last day at Leopardstown being 2 mile 5 was the longest he's gone over fences so far. And just might be one of these where he's got a bit of natural pace about him in comparison to some of these, that he might be able to hold his pitch. The thing that's going to count against him is jumping, just in terms of inexperience. And that is probably a major thing to consider. But as a result, he is quite unexposed. You see how over at Cheltenham, at Aintree, how good these Irish horses have done. It seems bizarre, really, that Pat Fahey would interested. He doesn't send that many over to England in the first, England or Scotland in the first place. So they must think he has a bit of a squeak. And I think there's enough in his form to suggest that a big staying trip might help. And the last day's form, I take to be quite good, that fourth at Leopardstown, a very competitive handicap chase on their season finale. So I'd like him. And the other one I'd like is actually Sean Quillen's ride, the Ferrymaster.
Oh! Again,
similar comments apply. Very unexposed horse. Again, looks like he wants a big trip. He's won twice over 3 miles this year. The two times he's been beaten have been over 2.5. The last day he was beaten in a good race at Haydock. Well beat, to be fair, in a 2.5 mile race by Galahad Quest. For what it's worth, I think that the second horse in that, Marone, will enhance the form earlier on the card. I think in the 150, I think he'll take a heap of beating in the 3 mile novice handicap. So that could enhance that look form. I think he needs a step back up in trip. Whether he wants a complete 4 miles, that's, you know, hard to know. But he does like better ground from his point-to-point days with Colin Bow. I think he's got a lively enough chance, and again, nearer the bottom of the weights. I just think a few of these at the top of the weights are fairly opposable and fairly exposed. As I said earlier, I wouldn't put anyone off the two Rorys, put up Jingo Dollar and Not a Chance. They'd have been on my shortlist, that's for sure. But I think at the prices, I think you can get 14-1 in a place on both of mine, the Ferrymaster and Mr. Fogpatches, and I'll take them both each way.
I love the fact that you've put up Sean Quinlan. I'm very interested in all three of your selections, to the point that I would be looking at a TriCast. Thank you very much. With the tote, particularly with this tote plus 10% bonus on all dividends. Nice. So the Ferrymaster gets a very positive mention. Danny Mullins, good friend of the show, of course. And of course, it's Dingo Dollar for Rory DeLargy. And I presume complete and utter war between Sean Quinlan and the starter.
It ain't nothing but a heartbreak.
If Robbie Sebel's there. Oh, please be there, Robbie Sutton, please. No, one weekend we'd like you to be there. If you haven't heard our entry review, we did two, days one and two, with Jess Stafford and Kate Tracy. Of course, we talk about the historic success of Rachel Blackmore, and Jess was there for that. She was also there for Buzz, who ran second in the entry hurdle, but runs for the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity. So that meant a huge amount to them that they were second. Then we're joined by Paul Ferguson, Jamie Benson, and Sean Quinlan. And the show pretty much opens with Sean Quinlan just laying into Robbie Supple and also sharing the view of the weighing room and what his fellow jockeys think of him. You can hear all that now. They're the two podcasts previous to this one on your podcast app. And remember to like, share, and subscribe, as all the YouTube kids say. To the flat. So Newbury, good. 135. Dubai Duty Free Finest Surprise Stakes. I'm not even going to give you prices, Andrew. I'm just going to go straight to you. Come on, let's go. You cannot wait to talk about it. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good race, to be fair. I think there's plenty in here with kind of quite unexposed profiles coming from their 3-year-old campaign. And I'm going to side with one of them. I think the favourite is this Al Azzi, who was last seen behind Mogul in the Gordon Stakes at Goodwood. He looked quite progressive up until then. And he seemed to be quite short. I think he was 15-8 when I looked at the book, which I thought was a hint short, considering we haven't seen him for that long an amount of time. And the one I'm going to give a chance to also on his seasonal reappearances Without a Fight for the Crisford team and Andrea Azzini. Just thought he was a very nice kind of progressive type last year. Started off in a mile two Newbury maiden when he came third and ended up winning three on the bounce after that. He was quite a close third behind Berkshire Rocco on his last start in the No More Less. Berkshire Rocco had previously finished second, obviously, in the Ledger and has gone on to finish second in a Group 1 out in Doha back in February time there. So I think that was a decent enough performance, and I think it could have been marked up slightly as well. And I think maybe dropping back to a staying mile and a half could well suit this horse. He's unexposed on a bit of nicer ground as well, which I'd be interested to see. He's only run on good to firm once at Redcar when winning pretty impressively. Now, the form of that is open to a fair amount of questions. So it'd be interested to see how he's going to go on it in this better type of race. But I think he's around 6 to 1, 13 to 2, and probably play that each way. It wouldn't be one of my stronger fancies of the weekend, that being said. But I think he's as good a chance as any. He's a nicely progressive horse last year. Still, you know, I think there's unfinished business with him as a four-year-old this year. So hopefully he can develop into a nice type of gelding for the Crisford team and collect plenty of prize money.
Okay. I think you are right, by the way, that the price about him now is around about 6 to 1. Maybe even 13 to 2 in places, possibly. But Without a Fight for Simon and Ed Crisford and Andrea Azzini. So that's the starting point. Roy DeLargy, what about you?
I quite like Deja.
Ah.
Deja. Not seen since finishing down the field in the Ebor. Had no chance the way that race was run. You can forget. If you had a look back at the Ebor, you had to be on the front end. Pretty much from the get-go to figure in the finish of the Ebor. And he was on, give Harry Bentley a rather unfortunate ride in that he didn't settle in the early stages, and Harry held him up and, you know, basically spent the first half of the race trying to get him to settle. And then he didn't have an awful lot of chance of getting into the contest from there. And it's a bit of a write-off. It was write-off for a few horses, the Ebor. So I completely ignore that. And aside from that, he's got a very, very likable profile. Obviously, he's only raced in handicaps, but he was runner-up at Royal Ascot last year in the Duke of Edinburgh, behind Scarlet Dragon, giving that horse weight. I thought it was a very good performance. And he's followed that up by winning another of the most competitive handicaps of the season, the Old Newton Cup at Haydock. Now, that was on heavy ground, but obviously it wasn't particularly testing at Ascot. I don't think he'll need... I mean, I wouldn't want him on lightning fast ground. And obviously we had to keep an eye on the weather forecast, but I don't think he needs it really soft. I think he's just a massive improver. He had a bit in hand over Laffey and the Trader at Haydock, and obviously he's stepping up in class here. But, you know, he won one of the most competitive handicaps of the turf season in the UK last year with a mark of 105. And if that doesn't make him a Group 3 horse, I don't know what does. Ryan Moore booked for Peter Chappell Higham. Obviously he might need the run after a break, but he was pretty ready at Royal Ascot last year, only beaten half a length there. Mm-hmm. So I don't think so. I think he'd run really well. And his form compares favourably with most of the field. So I'll give him a chance stepping up a class.
Okay. So Dea is 7-2, 4-1 in places as we're currently recording, and is only the second runner of the season for Peter Chappell-Higham as we record. But the Ryan Moore booking, very significant. We'll get more from Rory and Andrew in a second. First of all, the Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote, looking to bring pool betting back to the masses with better value, brilliant bets, and, of course, the slick new app. And with the Tote guarantee, you'll never be paid less than SP and win bets. And if the pool pays more, you get the bigger price. And with Tote Plus, you get that extra 10% gravy on top. It has never been easier to place your favorite bets online. line, including Placebot, Scoop 6, Exactas, Trifectas, and the Tote Survivor, where the aim of the game is to be the last person standing. If you have not got an account yet, join Tote today and enjoy a risk-free bet on any of Tote's pools. Terms and conditions apply. While we're talking about some free gravy, our good friends at Weatherbees have teamed up with us again because they have released a new book that is a must-have for all racing fans. From classic contenders to hardened handicappers, the Weatherbees team, with our good friend Paul Ferguson, run the rule over more than 40 horses who look ready to win on the flat this year. It is complete with a dedicated section on two-year-olds, informative editorials exploring first-season sires, classic contenders, sales toppers, plus Paul Ferguson's five to follow on the flat. Of course, we got you covered here at the Final Furlong Podcast. All you have to do is head to weatherbeesshop.co.uk and enter the promo code FLAT21. That's all lowercase, FLAT21, and you will get £3 off the digital, print, or the print and digital bundle. So it's entirely up to you. But we're giving you that Final Furlong Podcast gravy once again with our good friends from Weatherbees. FLAT21 is the promo code. Weatherbeesshop.co.uk. Get the gravy and get that essential insight. All right, back to the lads. We'll move on to the 210, which is the Dubai Duty Free Stakes, registered as the Fred Darling. Also, I've just remembered something. I corrected Rory about his, he said, Hennessy/Ladbrokes. And I went, Ladbrokes Trophy. And if there was a camera in the Final Furlong Podcast studio, I literally put my hand to my mouth going, oh, what have you done? It's always the Hennessy. It's always the Hennessy. And for some reason, it was like you almost tricked me into saying it. I don't know how, but I would like to correct that for the record. It's the Hennessy. Thank you very much. Right. Alcohol free. Heads of the betting. Frandra Balding with Oisin Murphy on board. Happy Romance, Richard Hannon and Sean Levy. Round about fours. Isabella Giles, sixes. Dandela, who was terrific last season, sevens. And Lucid Dreamer, who we've only seen the twice for Roger Charlton and Jason Watson. Daughter of Dan Silly out of Sleepwalk and Oasis Dreamer is tens. Let's start with Andrew Blair White. The Dubai Duty Free Stakes, my friend.
Yeah, geez, very hard race this. Plenty of very good, potentially very, very good fillies. All with good profiles from last year, alcohol free. I think it is the worthy favourite, obviously, coming in here, having won the Cheveny Park, beating Miss Amulet to Ken Condon, who was a bit of a revelation last year for Ken Condon.
Star!
Looked halfway through the year that she'd completely flattened off. I remember she got beaten a race, I think, at Down Royal halfway through the summer, and you thought, well, she's petered out, and then she went on to finish second in this and third, I think, over in the Breeders' Cup.
Yep.
So alcohol free has her chance. I'd be willing to take on Dandela. I just had a suspicion, and this could be completely wrong, just had a suspicion that she was very forward last year, and I'm just not sure if you put her up against some of the horses she beat at the start of last season, whether she'd beat them again now. So that would just be something at the back of my mind. The one I'm gonna go for is Isabella Giles for Clive Cox and Adam Kirby. I'm just going to give her a chance. I know she was desperately disappointing in the Phillies Mile, but there was excuses that day. She's won the Prestige and the Rockfell before that, looking very impressive in the process. I think this step back down to seven furlongs should suit her. She seems grand, versatile. And she was very likeable last year. Again, she's going to have to go and prove that she's trained on from two to three, but there's no reason to suggest she won't. She looked very good last year for the majority up until that last run. And I think she's probably the percentage play at the prices. The one I'm very interested in, I'm not probably going to back her, but is this Lucid Dreamer at Roger Charlton's. I think she could be very interesting. I'm probably not going to play her, but I'll certainly be keeping a wide eye out on her because she's open to an awful lot of improvement. I thought she did it very snugly at Newbury at the back end of last year in a small runner conditions race. I thought she looked quite nice and still looked like she was learning on the job. So certainly one I suspect to keep the right side of. She certainly looks like she'll improve for a bit of time off and maybe a winter strengthening up. So Isabella Giles for today, for Sunday's race, but probably Lucid Dreamer going forward into the season.
Yeah, I think Lucid Dreamer looked very green on debut, but she looked an awful lot better over course and distance on her second start, and I wouldn't be surprised if she kicked the season off with a win. So she's definitely a horse I'm keeping a very close eye on, but she might need it. You're right about that. And just remind us of your selection again.
Isabella Giles. I think she's probably the stronger call just based off her form last year.
Yeah, she one of the toughest fillies in training last year, and completely agree with you. Very much excuses available to her. She was a horse that you really liked as well, Rory.
She was, yeah, and I'm going to agree with Andrew there.
Go on, the
for all alcohol free is clearly a smart prospect. I think if there's one that's going to be underrated in the race, it will be Isabella Giles, based on what happened at Newmarket, when she just gave every indication of being over the top. You know, she hadn't pulled like that in her earlier races, and that's often a sign. When they go over the top, it's not just a case of them running flat. They often, interestingly, as speaking to someone about this a couple of years ago, they say you can often get fooled by fillies suddenly seeming to work better than they've done at home, and thinking, oh, she's not over the top at all, she's absolutely flying. And then you run them on the course and you find out what they're doing is they've just stopped saving something for themselves, and that's, as a result, they tend to work a bit more freely at home. The freeness makes you think that they're in really good order, and actually you run them on the track and they just race freely on the track as well, which is no good. And that's what happened to her. So I think all the signs were that she just had one race too many. Her form before that's very good. She was she didn't get the credit she deserved for winning at Goodwood and the Prestige Stakes. I know she took the shortest route home that day compared to the favourite, for example, but she was value for the margin she beat Prado by, I thought. She's a case of whether, you know, Pomelo got a poor ride in the end from Harry Bentley, who came a long, long way to get to the rail in the straight. Whereas you want to race on that side of the track, but you don't want to spend an age coming across. And Adam Kirby, who also sort of came to the middle of the track on the soft ground at Goodwood, just saved about five lengths by doing so. But Pomelo was well beaten in the end. She ended up finishing last. And Isabella Giles is better judged on the form of the second and third there. We know that Seattle Rock, who was third, had lots of good form last season. Not easy to win with, but she's a fairly decent yardstick. And as I said, I think that form is solid, and it's been a little bit underrated. And of course, she went on and proved that by winning the Rockville. Mm. So I don't know why you'd want to question her, really. So she's she maybe lacks the scope of alcohol free, but fillies are never easy. You know, you always assume, you know, however many runs they've had it to. Look at Sacred the other day. I mean, she looked like she'd gone properly over the top at the end of last season. Like, you know, she hadn't progressed at all since the middle of the summer. She was beaten in the Flying Childers, then she comes back and wins an El Guin, yeah, over a trip that you wouldn't have thought she'd stay. And I remember Pebbles, who was one of the best fillies I've ever seen, when she turned up for the Guineas, having had a really busy season, no one wanted her at all. And you know, in the anti-post markets, they just written her off because she was, I know we're going back a long time to deal with Pebbles, but the notion that you look at fillies and colts differently. If you have a colt who's run eight or nine times as a two-year-old, you tend to think, well, that's not going to progress to win a classic at three. Fillies can take a lot of racing and then suddenly thrive just in the summer of the three-year-old careers. So don't judge them based on the number of runs that they've had.
Very much agreed. Quick question for all of you. Has Donegh O'Brien ruled Shale out of the 1,000 guineas?
No idea.
Nope, absolutely no.
Okay, then the 20-1 is absolute madness, because she needed that run on her comeback, and talking about being over the top, she was over the top in this race. Donegh said that. So 20-1 about the 1,000 guineas when Aidan O'Brien has expressed serious reservations on this very podcast about the favourite. Not saying she can't do it, but that it will take something very special. Paraphrasing, but that's in and around what he said. So 20 is about Shale, one of the best fillies around last season. Bonkers. And I agree with you, both about Isabella Giles. Let's get stuck in. Right, 245 is the Watership Down Stud 2 Darn Hot Greenham Stakes. Could I have said that any slower? I'm not sure. Right, so we've got a number of very interesting horses in here, including Chint, of course. And he is favoured around about 9 to 4. Then Fundamental, 4s. Nando Prando, 7s with a Master, 8s. Andrew Blair White, what is your thinking for the 2000 Guineas trial, the Greenham?
Yeah, I think it's another tricky race. This one, obviously, Chin just brings a level of form to the table that looks hard to beat and probably will be hard to beat. That being said, I'm going to take a chance on Alchemate in this. I'm not sure about the 7 furlong trip. It is a little bit of a question mark, given that he only ran on us once last year in the Dewhurst, but that was it's a bit like Isabella Giles in the Phillies Mile. You know, you can just put a line through that completely. I'm just a little bit disappointed that Jim Crowley's not on Alchemation. He's on Mujbar instead for Charles Hills. That would just slightly temper my enthusiasm. And there is that worry that Alchemate potentially might be better over 6 furlongs this year. That being said, I think he's a very nice horse by the same sire as Marcus Tregoning's and Mahathir from last year, obviously. So he knows it well. I just think this horse, the way he won the Mill Reef at Newbury, was in the style of a really, really good horse. And I'd like to hope that he may be able to continue that on this year. I do think in time he will get 7 furlongs, especially on nicer ground. So that would be my hope. And I'll probably play him, but a bit of a tentative play, I suspect. And just hoping he runs well. And if he doesn't stay, I still think there'll be a big future for him this year over 6 furlongs.
Okay. So you were going for Alchemate, Dane O'Neill on board. So technically speaking, the second string. 5s and a shorter price than who Jim Crowley is riding. Mujibar, who is 12s. Interesting. Roy DeLargy.
I agree with that largely, but I do. I think Alchemate is a sprinter. I think everything he did last year suggests that. He's quite high strung as well. He's a little bit frightened of the wind, as we find out on that run when he won the Mill Reef. He's clearly very smart. He didn't give his running in the Dewhurst. He probably got new Marcus a lot more exposed than Newbury is. And if he is a horse, as Marcus Tregoning said, who is frightened by the wind, then there was plenty of wind for him to be frightened by a new market. I'm happy to forgive that, but you wouldn't want to take him to the Guineas on the back of that anyway. But obviously, I want to find out if he stays beyond 6 furlongs, and it makes a bit of sense at this stage of the season to run him here. They could run him at Ascot's opening fixture as well. It's a nice 6 furlong contest there. But you might as well throw your hat in the ring. And I think he deserves his chance here. But my reading of his form last year is that he's very much a sprinter in the making. I wouldn't judge his stamina purely on the Dewhurst. But I'm very much unconvinced about his stamina. Nando Parada was better than his 151 SP in the Coventry. He ran much better races on his next two starts in Grade One company afterwards, finishing second in the Grand Criterium on ground he probably wouldn't have liked. He may do all right this season, Nando Parada. No reason to think he won't train on. But I do like Chindit here. Again, he was disappointing in the Dewhurst, but he got messed around a bit in the run, and Pat Dobbs didn't get too serious with him when it looked like his winning chance had gone. Prior to that, he'd won his first three, and I was very impressed with his win in the Champion Stakes at Doncaster. I thought it was a very good race. I think both he and Al Bashir are promising types. Obviously, State of Rest was disappointing next time out, but Mujbar, who finished fourth, was a good winner on his next start. And I thought it was a smart piece of form from Chindit. I thought he was clearly the best horse on the day. He only won by a length in the end, but he travelled really strongly through the contest, and I thought he had a little bit in hand. Obviously, didn't repeat it, but he's suited by a track like Doncaster, which means he's going to be suited by a track like Newbury again. And yeah, the likelihood of him getting a pretty pretty quick grind as well is a big positive. He handled it well, both at Ascot and at Doncaster. And you can maybe argue that the ground was on the soft side from at Newmarket. I'm not sure I would jump to that conclusion straight away. But his performance in the Champion Stakes, I thought, was one of the nicest two-row performances of last season. And it suggests that he'd be ideally suited to this. I'm not sure he's a miler. There's a fair degree of 7 furlong speed in his pedigree. All his runs have come over 7 so far. His dad was a 7 furlong performer, and she's out of Oasis Dream. Sorry, by Oasis Dream, Journey Me. Can't believe I said that. I was going to say he was out of an Oasis Dream mare. I think 7 furlongs, quickish grounds at Newbury will be absolutely ideal for Chindon. I think I'll take a decent horse to beat him.
This brings us to the 320, the Mansionbet Spring Cup. And we've got a Nearkos family horse at the head of the market. Well, colour me pink, that's it, we're done. Take it away, Andrew. Tell us why Troll Peninsula is going to bolt up.
He could be very well in. There's no getting away from that. Quite like Danya, I backed Danya in the Lincoln. And he ran a very perfectly respectable race in the process.
We were both on.
Still learning, Daniel, I feel. He's a little bit immature still for a horse who's had plenty of runs at this stage. And I still think there's maybe a little bit more to get out of him. He'd be one I would be interested in. I might have a couple of quid on each way. I think he's a nice horse. I really, really liked him last year. Is Brian Meehan's horse in this rack. He potentially may need this run, and he's off a career high mark of 107. But every right to have gone up in the weights last year. He was very, very good. I thought he won a couple of times. He won at Sandown, he won at Ascot. Before finishing 5th in the Balmoral. I think you can mark up that performance as well. I'm not sure the race just quite went to suit. He ended up in front plenty early enough. I know he's been prominent in other ones, in other of his races, but that was his first big field handicap. It is tough to make all in those big, 20 runner miles, straight mile races at Ascot. So I'd mark that up. I don't know whether, off top weight of 107, I'm surprised they're not having a dip into listed class with him and throwing their hand at that or potentially even a Group 3. I think he's got the ability to become a Group 3 horse. And it's interesting that he is still an entire horse as well. They haven't gone and gelded him yet. Mm. As they obviously think there may be a future for him at the moment anyway. And that always just makes me feel a bit better that they're obviously seeing something. And they're seeing potential breeding possibilities still in the tank with this horse. I thought he did it very nicely, as I say, in his 2 starts, especially that win at Ascot where he beat Bransky 5 lengths. It was an extremely impressive performance. He may well need this run, but he's certainly one to keep an eye out for, and I'll probably have a couple of quid each way on him at a double figure price.
Yes, Roark, who you can get as a best price at 12-1 for Brian Meehan and Dane O'Neill. Rory?
You'd be delighted to hear, if I can find the race again, I was very keen on the Nearkos horse here. I was looking for one at a biggish price.
Come on, DeLargy, the crowd goes wild.
But I have to say, the more I looked at the race, the more I thought that Troll Peninsula was potentially thrown in here.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by his win at Kempton last time. I was obviously only had the one run on turf, and that came at Redcar on heavy ground, which will be very different to what he faces here. But two runs on the all weather in maiden / novice company have made him look like a decent horse. And although he was well placed the way the race played out at Kempton last time, I thought physically it was just very impressive. It looked a pretty well contested novice with all the big yards represented. He's beating horses from John and Thady, Gosden, James Fanshawe, and all the rest of them in that contest. With both Bonneval and Mount Marcy having shown useful form beforehand, and he's beaten Mount Marcy 3.5 lengths with Bonneval another half length behind the horse he was also penalised for having won before. But Bonneval had Benoit de la Sayette taking £7 off him. And for Troll Peninsula to beat him four lengths with more up his sleeve, I thought was a very good performance. I think he could easily be higher than 88, a fair bit higher than 88 as well, even on the bare form of that. And while it's never easy winning a big race like the Spring Cup on your handicap debut, I just thought he was just the type of horse to win this on the way to picking up Black Type in the summer.
Yeah, I thought he looked a group class horse in the making on that, on the basis of that victory.
Yeah, and obviously the handicap's got a tough job keeping tabs on horses like that, because you know you can only judge them on the form they're showing. You win a class five novice, exactly how high can you go in terms of a handicap mark? But some of those tend to be very well contested. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the second and third turned out to be fairly useful handicappers themselves. And as I said, he's won that in really nice style. I think Cara Conti will do well as a
stallion,
as a sire as well.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think you know, sort of 8 to 10 furlongs on goodish ground will be where his stock will do particularly well. And I like this one.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking for him. I was looking for something a lot darker in this race, but I find it, the more I looked at it, the harder it was to get away from him. Obviously, as I said, his inexperience could let him down, but he didn't look inexperienced.
No,
that's the thing. You know,
he looked very professional.
He looked very professional last time out, and he looked at the kind of horse you throw him in a big handicap. He won't be he won't show many signs of greenness. So he's the obvious one. The one that I was trying to convince myself to go for in the race was Matthew Flinders. Who's a horse who should do well in fast ground handicaps this year. He did race over a mile and a quarter last season, but I think he'd be a better horse over a mile. He won over a mile and a quarter at Doncaster, but ran at least as well, in fact, ran a lot better when winning over a mile at the same track in September. And then to me, he didn't stay a mile and a quarter on softer ground at York in October. So I think he was winning over a mile and a quarter by dint of just having more class than his rivals earlier in the season. He's out of a Monsieur Mare, so a mile and a quarter really should be his trip. Siuni tends to be a sire of milers, and he looks like, because he's quite a forward goer, he's quite a free goer, I think he's always going to do best at around a mile. And dropping back in trip is a big positive for him. So he'd be the other one that I'd have on my radar for the race.
Cara Conti, by the way, is a triple Group 1 winner who, of course, won the Breeders' Cup Mile. And the Niarchos family have thrown a lot of their chips in with him because he's covered an awful lot of their mares. Some with Aidan O'Brien, some with Jessica Harrington, some spread across France with André Fab. So they're going for it with him. And let's see if this fella can get the job done. So that's Troll Peninsula. Your second pick is Matthew Flinders, but you've talked yourself out of it. I was going for Dania blindly. And then as I scrolled down through the list, I went, wait, this guy looked group class in the making last time out. So he'd probably be my nap of the weekend, Troubling itself. Which leads me to the question, what is the nap of the weekend for Andrew Blair White?
It would be Tommy's Oscar in the Scottish Champion Hurdle.
Tommy's Oscar. Okay. Any relation to Tommy Hunter? I wonder. Line of Duty fans, Sunday night, watch. Let's not say anything. No spoilers.
Same birthday as Ted Hastings. You know, that's not a spoiler. Me and Ted Hastings have the same birthday. Not the same year, mind you. 15th of July.
Delargy been doing his detective work. We've had a nice debate about this beforehand, but we're not saying anything. That's it. No spoilers for Line of Duty Sunday night, BBC One. Make sure you don't miss it. It's an amazing show, and I have a terrible fear this could be the last season. Anyway, Roy Delargy.
Dingo Dollar in the Scottish National.
Oh, we got ourselves a patent, ladies and gentlemen, because I'll put up Troll Peninsula. There's your three. And seriously, look at Tote Plus on the day. First of all, whatever the SP is, you're guaranteed to get that anyway. But now Tote are also going to add 10% to your winnings. Tote Plus, check it out this weekend. Been fun, gentlemen. Thank you very, very much. Andrew Blair White, pleasure to chat to you as always. Looking forward to talking to you again as we resume normal proceedings on Thursday next week.
Thanks, Amos. Pleasure.
Take care. Rory, pleasure as always. Looking forward to chatting to you again on Thursday. Thursday as well.
Marvellous stuff.
And thank you to you for listening. We have a special with Richard Johnson to come. He's an absolute gentleman, and I really hope you enjoy it. But again, if you haven't listened to our entry reviews yet, they're both available for you. Some winners in waiting there, and our Aidan O'Brien podcast is available as well. 40 minutes on some of his biggest horses of the season. And some of the horses that he gives to follow, not horses that you would be thinking of at all, particularly when it comes to the older horses. One of them is
all train them.
One of them's already won. Lope Fernandez has come out and won. He said on the Final Furlong podcast exclusively, this horse will be a miler this season. If you like this content with Andrew and Rory, then retweet, share on social media. That's all we ask of you. Have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Take care. God bless.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Bet with Tote and support racing in the UK and Ireland.